Five is helping a modern language teacher have her kids create MP3s. And I said, okay, how many of you kids listen to MP3s? Well, they all raised their hand. I said, how many of you have made MP3s? I was stunned.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mike and Sean Go to EduCon podcast. I am Sean Musselman, your 8th grade earth science teacher and host for this podcast. And this is my first podcast where I discuss some of the sessions that I've attended at EduCon. The first one was particularly important to me because of a coming class that I'm about to begin with fellow Reading teacher Chris Freiberg of the neighboring middle school, the Coolidge Middle School. Chris and I will be taking a training course on Moodle, and we have to learn about how Moodle works and learn about how to engage with our students in Moodle so that we can potentially run a virtual high school algebra course in the coming academic year. For this reason, my first session was with Ted Bongiovanni. He's a NYU professor. And his discussion was titled Best Practices for Teaching and Learning at a Distance, which, of course, is what we're doing. When it was time to do some breakout sessions, I found myself joining a group of other educators who were interested in blended learning. And what I assumed blended learning to be was a combination of classes, both online and in the room. But we quickly found out as a group that not everyone had the same opinion.
Question. We've been struggling with that terminology at our school for a long time. I've always said blended means partial face-to-face, like we're doing here, mostly online, or half enough. But can the face-to-face still be through Skype or other web-based? Can it be that?
Is there, or is it bandwidth and things like that.
In the definition, that's what we're struggling with. Because we do talk so much face-to-face with our students, here we're 100 miles away.
With the blended classroom that I'm seeing, it's either half and half or even more
online.
I see it like when I'm thinking of my own blended classroom, I see my kids every day. Can one or two of those days a week be spent in a computer lab or with the laptop systems and they're doing something, and then I can meet with each kid I can get that more one-on-one engagement with the kids and kind of separate myself from the traditional classroom, so to speak.
For me, the blended thing was about that master's project that I talked about, where a teacher was teaching that same course at Stony Brook. And so what I did was I videotaped everything he did in that class and then broadcast it over to the people in Taiwan. And they could watch it 13 hours later. And right. Still, also, we did chatting. We did a chat room to make it more interactive.
But that's not blended. That's just a combination of synchronous and asynchronous.
Yes, but normally he wouldn't have done just the video. He would have gone there and spent 2 weeks with them. So you can still do the video during, let's say, a month's worth of classes and then go and meet with them for 2 weeks.
So after we all pretty much decided to agree to disagree, so to speak, on what the many different ways online learning could be and how it was, we started talking about some of the dilemmas that we faced when trying to teach in an online setting.
Yeah, do it online or in the classroom is equally challenging. Probably more so if a teacher doesn't know how to explain or get their idea across. So I think best practices in just getting a site that works would be the most effective thing in just getting a push. The other side of the coin is having students who are motivated to go on and not be distracted for a period of time in front of a computer, which is a challenge in itself. And get them to focus when they can't focus in the classroom. So,
what you just said was so important, the interaction, because if we have at-risk students and then we're saying that they fail the class and they take it online, it's the interaction that they're missing.
Right.
So if that has some
positive interaction.
Yeah.
Because so many times they haven't had that positive feedback from teachers. They all acted up and they get sent to the office. They're used to just being in a negative situation in school. So it could have been something positive, and I think that was how we reached out for some of those at-risk. It's just building it up and letting them know that they could succeed. Some of them, it was the first class they passed in a long time.
Now, the last educator here in this conversation, and she was talking about a specific situation in her classes where the students that were taking her online classes were actually students that were failing the traditional classroom settings. And so her online classes were, as I would put it, maybe acting as a bit of a drop zone.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a computer, you can automate positive feedback. I mean, things that you can't do on a worksheet, you know, you can't answer a question and get immediate feedback, you know, yes, this is right, yes, this is wrong. The computer, you have the opportunity to do that. Maybe that'll help some students.
This is why the other educator got into the need for feedback and positive feedback, immediate positive feedback, in an online setting.
The other thing is this assumption that kids know how to do all this. I have found that kids are technology users, but they're not necessarily content creators. So a little example was I was helping a modern language teacher have her kids create MP3s. And I said, okay, how many of you kids listen to MP3s? Well, they all raised their hand. I said, how many of you have made MP3s? I was stunned.
So once we got back past some of the drawbacks to online learning, or the challenges, I should say, we moved on to the good stuff.
So what has worked well? We didn't really address that one, did we? This is the part where I want to learn and take away stuff. So what have you created or have you done and observed that it's good?
Group work online, collaborative group work.
That's good.
I think actually as a teacher, you know, you always want to have nice groups going, but you never know who's the slacker and who's doing it all. With group work online, particularly if you're using Blackboard or Moodle, you can actually track the discussion contributions, you track who. So I found group work to be very successful because, but again, you can't just say, here's your group, here's your digital learning space, go for it. You've got to be in there reading those emails, offering that advice. So it's that constant facilitation of the process. But I find that that can really be exciting for people. They get to connect and they like that.
Many of the other educators gave a lot of other good, strong examples of how they were using modules and different types of discussions in classes. But one thing that we came back to was the need to have a really strong network and community in place for our classes, which rang later when I was in a third session and listening to Chris Lehman, who's the principal of the Science Leadership Academy, talk to a packed house in a shared discussion about how, what was leadership 2.0, and the key being building a community. So it was no surprise that, you know, this idea of building a strong, caring community was brought up as a key to online learning.
In the courses that I teach, the first week is always devoted to getting to know each other. So that means they have to post an image or an avatar. They have to talk about their interests outside of the class. They have to talk about their career background in case somebody knows something that somebody else needs to know. So we do spend a lot of time really virtually getting to know each other. And I think people don't want to take that time out of their content, but it's really important.
You're building that community. Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks a lot.
The other things I've seen is that they created what they call a cyber cafe, so that's a place to post anything that you want to talk about. It has nothing to do with the course. There's also another place where you can post questions to the instructor, where if your question maybe is the same question 10 other participants have, when you post it there, 10 people don't have to ask the same question. They can get their answer right away.
We have students and instructors create e-portfolios with pictures, kind of bios, backgrounds, links to relevant resources. Every course must have an introduce yourself thread where the instructor does the first one in models. I'm sorry, David, go, man.
One of the interesting things, one of our teachers, we have a Moodle platform, Moodle Instance, as part of our digital space. And really interestingly, one of the teachers used the glossary feature in Moodle. What you do is you... Every time you log on, it refreshes, but if you have the glossary invoked, it puts up a new word for you. Well, instead of putting a content-specific word, what the teacher required was that the student puts content about them in a glossary entry. So every time that someone refreshed,
you got a new
student popped up, and this is what I'm interested in, this is how I like to learn. So
it's safe to say my first session was a great experience, and there was some wonderful conversations. I got to meet a lot of people and connect with some great educators from all over the place. I also received a number of different resources that could also help online, which I'd like to share with you now. Both the Khan Academy, like Genghis Khan, khnacademy.org, was listed as a great resource for some quick 10-minute modules that could be embedded into online learning, as well as powermediaplus.com, which was touted as a similar brand to United Streaming Resources. Two recommended reads for this type of learning, online learning, were published by the MacArthur Foundation, the first being Mimi Ito, who wrote about how kids learn on two levels online at the moment, an interest-based and friendship-based, and charged educators to push for an online intervention, so to speak, to get kids to start seeing educational value in the online setting. And then a work by Henry Jenkins titled Confronting the Challenges of Participatory Media. Both came with strong, confident remarks, so to speak. Again, I'd like to thank Ted Bongiovanni of New York University for his facilitation. You can follow him on Twitter at TeddyB109 if you'd like to learn more about what he had to share with us regarding online learning. That's all from me. Again, you can follow me at Mr. Musselman on Twitter.com. You can also follow my buddy Mike Springer at Profe, P-R-O-F-E, Springer, at Twitter as well. That's all from me. Look forward to meeting you all and seeing you all on Sunday when we round out this year's EDUCON conference. Have a great evening.